Okay, guys, you're listening to episode 21 of Unclean and Mostly Sober. This is the second part of a two-part interview with Emily Evans. She is a counselor out of Middletown, Delaware, and her practice name is Metanoia. This was another very educational interview. This was one that really helped us with one of our goals, which originally was to educate ourselves and kind of understand the minds of addicts a little more. And Emily definitely does that. You know, she schools my brothers and Mel. There was a overlap between last week's episode and this one just because there was no clean break. But I really wanted to start this episode where I did because, you know, as a father of two adopted children, this first couple minutes hit me pretty hard. So, thank you, Emily, and hope everyone enjoys. Welcome to Unclean and Mostly Sober, a family podcast that lacks that family-friendly feeling from a family that's lived it, where we delve into the world of addiction from the point of view of both the addicts and the loved ones they've affected. Come listen to some stories from the street filled with drug use, debauchery, and the preposterous lives of addicts. We hope to entertain you with these stories, and we hope to educate ourselves, and who knows, maybe even you along the way. We make no promises to be socially responsible, politically correct, or sensitive to your views or feelings. But if by some chance we help someone in even the most insignificant of ways, it may just be the best thing we've ever done with our lives. So shut the hell up. Let us feel good about ourselves, damn it.
So what happens is if a child learns that this happens in orphanages all the time. You know, babies don't cry in orphanages because they know that nobody's going to come. Wow. And it actually hurts so much. To cry and not be answered or comforted, that they stop crying. Their brains actually release opioids to numb that pain. So they learn in that first year of life that if I cry and ask for help and I try to reach out and connect, there's nothing there. So I'm not going to try that ever again. And so their brains actually start wiring to live in an environment that is hostile, that they learn to live in an environment of defense, mm-hmm. right? Because basically what happens is our environments get inside of us, right? Mm-hmm. So, there's that whole nature-nurture debate.
Yeah.
Well, the nurture actually matters a lot. And so the kids that I work with are very much in defense mode. They're very much, they believe that connecting with other people and attaching equals pain.
Yeah.
Right. And I also believe too that this is driving a lot of the opiate crisis that we have.
Absolutely.
Because we have natural opiate receptors in our brains. And so if you are if your brain is wired, right, to think, okay, this environment that I live in is going to be really painful and I'm going to have to do everything on my own, then your brain is going to shut down, right, all of those receptors that are going to be open for connection.
Right.
And you're going to have a lot more openness to defense.
Right.
And so, it's not hopeless, right, because of neuroplasticity and all of this awesome research that we're learning that people can learn.
Neuroplasticity.
I'm glad you asked that because I keep forgetting that I'm a total nerd. Neuroplasticity is, we used to think like back in the 80s that once you reach the age of two, your brain was stuck, right? Like nothing will change. You're doomed. Oh. But that's not true. Your brain can change up until you die. So what I try to do with my kiddos.
Of an elastic band.
Yes. In your brain. I love that.
Yeah, plasticity.
That's where I went with it. That's why I didn't ask.
Yeah. Plastic is pliable and moldable, right? So you can learn new things. And if you do have a loving,
You can teach a dog old new tricks.
Yes, absolutely.
Old dog new tricks.
You can teach old dogs new tricks. I mean, I've got teenagers, right, that grew up in the foster care system and spent time at Ferris, right? And so, but they're attaching.
There's something I haven't heard in a while. Ferris.
Yeah. Holy crap.
Did any of you frequent there?
No. I did
Jeremy.
A skate.
My best friend spent his summer vacations.
Jeremy has episodes.
Yes.
Yes. I remember those.
Jeremy has episodes.
Jeremy has episodes.
He does.
Sorry, guys. So it's hopeful, right? I don't want to ever paint the picture that this is bleak, because it is not bleak at all. And with the right types of therapy and the right people, right, the safe people, I'm very much working with all of my kiddos all the time. Like, what is a safe person? How do you know this person is okay to attach to?
That's like, that's like Tyler had to go through all this horrible stuff. And once he was with David and Lainey and got counseling, he's like, was a whole different kid after that.
Yeah.
Like, it was very helpful.
Yep. His brain changed.
Yeah.
And he learned, right? Because we can always learn.
Right.
He learned that there are safe people. And that attachment doesn't always hurt, and that it actually feels good if you attach to the right person.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think Tyler is prime example of that.
Yeah, but
his entire childhood was
littered with.
He said he had lived in something crazy like 30, 40 some odd homes by the time he was 16, 17 years old, or 12. Whenever David took him in,
12 or 13. Yeah.
So. And his life changed drastically after my brother and his wife took him in.
Well, he had stability.
And it was incredible.
And we're not, and again, we're not sitting here trying to disparage our sister.
No.
She has completely fixed her life.
And she knew that she dropped the ball. She knew exactly what, she knows this story. She's very familiar.
Tyler was loved. It was just dragged through shit.
In a horrible situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sure.
But, he was taken in by David and Lainey, who've always been, very straight edge, not drug addicts. Smoke the occasional pot. Smoke.
Maybe. Well, who hasn't?
Smokes a lot of pot
well,
now.
Well, Lainey does it for medical purposes.
Well, yeah, Lainey has.
She has
tumors growing all over her body. Oh. And she was the most straight edge person ever when she came into our family, when she married my brother. She was completely against it. She was repulsed by the fact that we smoked pot, whatever.
I will say.
And now she is the biggest advocate of it.
But her tumors slowed growth majorly.
No, they stopped.
Well, yeah,
she started smoking pot. Her tumors stopped.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah.
So you're from the Delaware area. I'm just saying this. And look, Lainey, I'm just messing with you this one time. If I told you we were bagging up, would you understand that?
Yeah. Means you're laughing. Like Raffle.
What the hell is that?
You know
do you not
I
remember
that?
Lacey? Lainey did not know what. She's bagging like, what up? Does bagging up mean? Lainey didn't know.
Oh, I didn't know until I started working for my company. And, she's a friend now, all those years ago that I started working there. She kept saying bagging up, and I had never heard it before.
What?
Yeah. And I knew what it meant, but I was like.
Like, I guess I met Lainey when I was in my late 20s, early
30s,
and she's saying, I'm like, what are you talking about? I've known that word, I've known that phrase since I was like
a child.
Two.
Yeah. Well, this was 17 years ago, so I think I was like maybe 20, 21.
17 years ago, love?
I don't know how old I am. I don't do math.
You were 18.
Yeah,
17 18. Years ago, you were 18. Holy.
That's awesome, Mel.
I don't math. You know this.
I don't math either.
Thank you.
I do feelings, but not math.
See, I'd rather, let's go feelings, guys, because I cannot math.
have issues.
I just asked Uncle Google. It's fine.
Uncle Google.
Uncle Google.
Yeah, see, my daughters ask me all the time, like, they have tough times. And, like, don't get me wrong. My daughters are, they make it so easy on me because they're so good at school, and I love it. Like, I barely have to do anything.
I'm going to ship my daughter down here.
But
Maybe she.
I am very much when it comes to school. I am very much the parent that does the school things. Mandy, I shouldn't have said her name. Whatever. Mandy is not the school type parent. Never has been.
Neither am I. Mandy, it's okay.
I've always been she the doesn't, parent that I does don't. All the school stuff. I've, yeah. You know, whatever. Projects, homework, whatever. He's that's the brain. That's my shit. So, but they always ask, you know, like, Ava, she hates math. She's good at it, but she hates it. Mm-hmm. And Peyton, she... No, Peyton's actually really good at math, too. But I always try to explain to them, math is probably the most important of all of them. Like, you use math every single day in everything.
To a point.
You need math.
What, yeah, but the problem is you get to algebra, and they're like, yeah, you don't really... Who the hell uses algebra anymore?
Science.
But math in general. I mean, yes. Math is...
Yes, your basics, you must know math.
Yeah.
If you can't count change, then you might as well just, you know, walk away now.
I can't count change.
Oh. I was going to say that.
I'm really... I
and she
can't.
Has her own business. That's...
My computer does it for me.
Calculator, guys.
Uncle Google and Uncle Excel.
If my computer ever left me, my business would fail.
Let's hope it doesn't get up on its two legs.
You aren't the only one, trust me.
There's a lot of people like us. I'm just saying.
I can't.
Like us.
My brain just can't. I mean, neuroplasticity and everything, but yeah I don't know. I don't think math is happening up there.
Every...
This old dog is not learning math.
I'm going to say it wrong. Every person's neural plasticity is not going to be the same.
That's right.
Some may grow faster and quicker than others.
Right.
And some
she
may just
be. She feels so good about herself right now.
Good.
some might just stay the same and keep that little two-year-old baby brain.
In certain areas, right?
Right.
Like
exactly.
Math.
Exactly.
Like Mel.
The math part of my brain says no.
Stop growing it too.
Exactly.
I'm with
stopped
Mel.
At kindergarten.
Sorry, we have other gifts.
That's right. See?
Other gifts.
Yes. I don't know what mine are yet, but I'll find them. I'll find
you definitely
them.
Have to.
Well, I'm fairly certain we're over the hour mark now.
We'll just keep going and we'll split it somewhere.
That's fine, or we can just make an extra long episode. Do you have any more questions you want to ask, Emily? I burned through my whole list. As far as the questions I have actually written
good job,
down.
Kevin.
Which I help you do.
I was the only one that had questions.
That's right,
this turd, he
wait.
Had not a single
Kevin
question
Kevin did his
down.
Homework.
Wait. This is not necessarily true. I helped him develop the list.
Okay. The last two questions on the list.
And they were both two-parters, so it's four.
Dude.
I actually
wow.
have a question.
I had an actual list.
Uh-huh.
He had nothing. I even asked him, I was like, do you have anything written down yet? He's like, no.
I like it when we wing it.
I did have an excuse
this
time.
I like winging it.
Yeah, I do too.
I did have an excuse this time. I did start a new position at work, and I have had no time to do anything.
That is really stressful.
It is.
Starting a new anything is stressful. Sorry,
just stop bailing him out.
All right.
It's because he's going to get lazier and lazier. Like, oh, man, we need more interviewees like this.
This from the guy for the first 10 weeks never developed a single question. We come and be like, come up with questions.
Bullshit. I still have proof. I keep all my questions. Yeah. So do I you? Approve of all of it. Yeah, I do.
Evidence,
son.
Have you ever been with a patient and, like, hearing their
client.
Story? Client, sorry.
It's okay.
And hear their story and, like, let's say they're crying and just you couldn't help yourself, but you cried with them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Is that, like, seen as ethical or not? Does that matter?
It's kind of human.
I would think so.
Yeah.
But you know the government and rules and...
Oh, there's so many rules.
That's what I mean. There's so many rules.
I don't think there's a rule against crying.
Thank
I mean,
God.
You don't know.
There might be someday.
Yeah.
Well, they might tax it, but I
mean, you're too Jesus. Emotionally invested in your client. Don't cry.
Right. So that's actually so funny thing. One of the questions that people ask me a lot is, how do you not take your clients home with you? And I say, yeah, I do.
But not literally.
I feel like,
really? I do.
Yeah,
I do take my clients home with me, right? Because I care about them.
There's no
right?
way you don't think about that stuff.
I do all the time.
That's the problem with being an empath in this position.
Right?
That's really difficult.
I cannot just... leave the cases in my office.
Yeah, like because I would totally go, yeah, but like, I feel John like Doe, I wonder how he's doing today.
I do. I wonder week. How. Yes. And I keep, like, I know what's coming up in each of their weeks.
Right.
And sometimes I'll reach out to them, you know, via email or text. But oh, that's nice. I'm so always thinking about
how
it.
Does that, how does that affect your relationship with your husband?
You'll have to ask him.
Well, let me. Well, wait, I mean, has it created issues?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Really? Okay. Sure. Sure.
Everybody has their own issues, and what she does every day, like, and she brings home her client's stuff every day. She feels for them. She's, you know, obviously thinking about them.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So, does it make it better or worse being empathetic with your patients? I feel like you have to be.
You have to have some empathy. Yeah, you
exactly, or else, unless you're just completely cold and calculated and cut off, like, all right, we're going to treat it as if it's just this or that. Like, I feel like right. You have to be empathetic towards these people. Like, they're going through hell.
Yeah.
So I feel like, I don't know. My question is, do you think it's better or worse being empathetic? Like, I feel like it has to be better, right?
I
know it makes it harder on you because yeah. You feel all of this.
I do. I definitely do. So here's... All right, here's where maybe some of my recovery work comes in, because there's definitely a lot of codependency in my family.
That's,
and
that's a big one.
I'm the great-granddaughter of a coal miner and a farmer, and there's alcoholism in my family tree, and so a lot of that codependent behavior gets passed down. There's a lot of intergenerational trauma. So in order for me to be an effective counselor, I had to do my own work. And a lot of that work has centered around being healthy emotionally and learning how to set boundaries. And I mean, Scott and I have been in a lot of therapy individually, both of us, and then together as a couple. I mean, if we sit down and think about all the money we spent on therapy, we're like, wow, we could have a vacation house. But anyway, but I wouldn't trade that. Like, right. We've worked through a lot of shit, and I'm not by any means saying that it's done.
Right.
But
always got to work.
Always. It's a lifelong thing. Like, yeah. I think a lot of people think, oh, I'm going to get to the point where everything's great. No. This is life.
You have to work on it.
Yeah. So I do. And I'm constantly, like, I'm in a bunch of different support groups for myself. I do a lot of, like, consult with different colleagues that I really trust and that are safe, and so I'm able to come to them when I have questions, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I really don't. I'm just doing the best I can, and I think I want to keep a beginner's mind, right? I think that helps.
Keep open.
What do you mean by a beginner's mind?
It's kind of like a mindfulness, like Buddhist thing that you should always...
Curiosity.
Yes. Like, and just the minute you start thinking that you've figured it all out, that's when you... when you're done.
When you actually think, I'm the professional here. Right. I know it all.
Absolutely. And I don't...
feel like you wouldn't be able to help your patients as well. No. Because then you're like, I know it all.
And they wouldn't feel comfortable with me.
Right.
Like, I don't view what I do as... Like, come here, let me tell you all of the secrets to life.
Right.
No,
you have a tough job.
I can't fix you. I just kind of put you on the road to help you fix yourself.
Try to give them coping skills. And
you know what it is? It's more like, I don't even know what the hell road we're on.
Right.
But I'm here beside you. So you're not alone.
And if you swerve left, I'll go with you to help.
Right. I'll go with you. Right. I'll watch for rattlesnakes. Right. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Rattlesnakes. I'm thinking like guardrails, and she's like, she's off in the desert.
Yeah, I'm off in the desert. That's how bleak it is sometimes, Sean. All right.
It's very dry.
It's very dry. But no, it is. I think in order to be an effective therapist, you have to do your work, and you constantly need a lot of support. And you need to put boundaries in place. And I've learned a lot of things the hard way. Like, I'm definitely not going to say that I've never made mistakes.
Don't we all.
But I'm learning. And my clients are the ones I have to thank, honestly. They have taught me so much. And I am a more mature, emotionally healthy person, and just a better person because of my clients.
That's amazing to hear. I've never heard a counselor
aside,
say that.
When it comes to real life shit, real world shit.
Right?
These people coming to you and obviously need you for guidance and help. Yeah, I feel like you're never going to gain more knowledge and wisdom and just real life experience than treating these people and hearing
learning
their stories
them.
And
the
exactly
truth.
Learning with them. That's
I can tell right now, and I just met you today, that I think you're probably an amazing counselor. Just because you're very down to earth, and you can tell she's very caring, and it's not just a job for money. It's like she cares.
I do.
Which some just shouldn't be in her profession, because I don't.
At what point in your
they have her mindset?
And what point in your career did stories like what you've probably heard from our podcast stop surprising you?
Probably after. All right, so I'll just tell you, I did work like the first year after I graduated. I worked in Wilmington in a nonprofit, and so I'd say probably 6 to 9 months in.
I was gonna say six to nine. Like, I thought you were gonna say 6 to 9 hours in.
Yeah, I was like, you know what? You can tell me anything. Yeah. Like, it's not gonna shock me, and I still have to tell people that, right? They're like, I don't want to tell you this, and I'm like, okay, well, let's. Before you tell me, what do you think it's going to be like?
Like they think
to tell
it's
me that?
So vile, so
right?
Like over the top.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, absolutely!
I'm going to tell you some dark, deep shit you've never heard before.
Sure.
And they're probably all thinking that they're going to be the first one to be telling you this horrible thing.
Exactly. And I'm like, you know what? You're not alone. You're not alone, and you're not beyond redemption.
For the record, it's Wilmington. So I've heard it all.
I know, right? And I am so thankful. Honestly, I am so thankful that that was the first place that I worked fresh out of grad school, because I...
Wilmington?
Yeah, in Wilmington and in community mental health. Yeah. And the professor who was doing my supervision at the time had a background in community mental health. And he used to say to me, and again, like if it weren't for the support, right, I wouldn't be able to do what I do. But he used to come to me and say, oh, Emily, I was talking to somebody the other day. It was one of your people.
It's one of your people.
And I was like, yes, they're my people.
Does that mean Wilmington?
Yes. They're one of my people.
Have you, so during
I
your.
I didn't say something when I would stop myself, because it's one of those where I get in trouble.
Oh, I don't even want to know.
No.
I'll tell you off air.
All right. Oh, no, you know what? The hell with it.
I was going to say, let my people go.
Jesus, Melissa.
Are you channeling Moses?
I think that's what just happened. I'm sorry.
She was trying to part the Red Sea. I've done that.
That's awesome.
She was holding her hands up in the air.
Let my people go. Just free
Let
them.
Us free.
Did
Let
you
us free.
Ever? So working in Wilmington, did you ever do any work with AI DuPont Hospital in Nemours?
No, I didn't work with the kids that early on, because mine were still a handful. And I didn't want to see anybody else's kids.
Did you have to deal with social workers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Do you still deal with social workers?
All the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because of Danielle's story and how long it took her to actually get custody of her grandson was, like, unbelievable to me. She said, basically, if the place that they're in, and this was a hotel motel.
Well, what it took for her to actually get custody of her grandson.
It didn't take long once it was once it's in the process, but the problem was getting to
there. But
there
was, like, multiple reports of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And it just took forever because they went into the hotel motel place, and it's clean.
Mm-hmm.
There's no drug paraphernalia at that time around or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, all right, this is fine.
Yep.
But for meanwhile, next door, there's hookers and,
you know, and that's
God
not,
knows what else.
That's not reportable.
Yeah, I don't even understand
And that's exactly what she was talking about.
Yeah. That's not reportable.
That blows
because
my mind.
That is not...
It's not bad enough.
Yeah. Well, that's not in their purview of why the police were responding at that moment. So they, you know, there could be a full on drug den next door, but if that's not why they're there, they can't put that on the report.
Exactly. Yeah.
That just blows my mind.
Yeah, we have a long way to go with child welfare.
They say too, there's so many kids that are in the
system.
Yes. And it's like, well, it's probably better for them to stay in their semi-bad situation because they might go somewhere to a more horrible one.
And that is the truth.
And that's terrible to hear.
Yeah. We need more foster parents.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? We need more therapists. We need more foster parents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need less drugs.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'll ask
good
you this.
Luck with
so,
that.
Well, and that's, and we've asked this before. What is your, do you find a direct correlation between what, and by the way, we're probably killing like 90 sponsors by asking this, between what drug companies and pharmaceutical companies are pushing? So big pharma,
oh,
and
yeah.
there's big, you know, the
Purdue,
you know,
yeah. Purdue Pharma. Boo. Sorry.
Between, I mean, do you find a direct correlation between them pushing fentanyl? I mean, it's huge right now. And, you know, 10 years ago, this wasn't even an afterthought.
No.
Between what they're pushing our politicians and what is happening to our children.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody wants to learn more about that, a really good book to read is Dreamland by Sam Quiñones. He was a journalist. Really? You read that one?
No, but I know the name.
Oh, it's a great book. So Sam Quiñones is a journalist, and he started researching the drug trafficking that was coming up, you know, the black tar heroin from Mexico.
Yes.
And he stumbled upon a really big story and then wrote a book about it. And I heard him speak a number of years ago in Wilmington. He did a little workshop at the charter school there. So I have an autographed copy.
Ooh, nice.
But anyway,
like
it's just
so excited.
Yeah,
I know. I'm so nerdy.
You are such
coming
a nerd.
Out right there.
So nerdy. I was excited
I am. I'm a total geek.
No, just so you know, my favorite movie of all time, and probably half my family, Lord of the Rings. Like we're nerds too.
I'm a total
And that's all.
I will just say that I have yet to get my wife to watch this.
Oh, the Lord of the Rings.
I have all those DVDs, and she will not watch them.
Shameful.
It is.
I'm sorry.
It's horrible. And she'd actually like them.
You would like them,
though. I think I would, too.
It's a shit right up her alley.
They're really long movies, aren't they?
Yeah.
And
you don't want to commit to that long.
I think I would binge watch it.
But she'll watch Mamma Mia 2 like 14 times in a row.
I love me some musicals.
Not all of them. It's got to be extra special.
I'm just being
facetious.
Sam Quiñones.
So anyway, Dreamland is the name of the book. But yeah, that really opened my eyes to just the role that these companies have played. And they rolled out OxyContin, and they knew that it had
the
supremely addictive potential.
Oh, absolutely.
But they wanted to make money, and so they were telling doctors, who don't have the time, frankly, honestly, to do the research themselves, because
yeah.
they're like me, overworked.
They look at it and be like, all right, so you guys did the research already? Hey,
exactly.
Great.
That right. So they're trusting, and then these drug companies are like, oh no, it's great for long-term pain and things like arthritis. No,
That's why I thank God for my family doctor, because he will never, without like, it's got to have like a 10-year track record before he even thinks about.
Good for him.
My sister was recently diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, so on Tuesday she had to have a port put in for her chemotherapy, and I was talking to my stepmom just asking how it went, and they obviously numbed the area. She was awake for this. And they wanted to give her fentanyl. And she said, no,
nope.
Absolutely not. And the doctor was like, why? This is a controlled environment. She said, no, I don't want it at all. So
that's,
she didn't.
That's potent stuff.
Yeah, so she's like, nope. And
good
she didn't do it with it at all. And we've been looking into like other alternatives once we learned about her having cancer and stuff like that. And
yeah.
I read this. So I don't know how accurate or true it is. But it was saying that, like, over in Mexico, they use, like, vitamins and things to help with cancer. And I believe some of it has cured. And so we were looking into that for her.
Mm-hmm.
These are just vitamins. So I was reading a thing saying that the reason why the United States won't use these vitamins is because they will never make a profit off of it.
Yep.
And that's basically it. They're not going to, pharma, if they were the ones manufacturing it, they weren't going to make a profit. So
why bother?
And they're not bothering with, and the reason they're not going to make a profit because they can't own it because their vitamins are something.
That's why, like Sean was saying earlier, you know, he's not the conspiracy theorist, whatever. And I'm not either by any stretch of the imagination. I just don't buy into that shit.
I started to listen to some of that just because of my
stepbrother
and stuff. But
Like, there is,
I think there's truth to
years,
everything out there.
There, in my mind, there is no doubt there has to be some form of cure to cancer. There has been, what, trillions of dollars dumped into the research of the cure of cancer, all this. But
there's no money in the cure.
Exactly. Why would they ever admit to a cure or when everything, when they are make it, it's probably the biggest money maker in the world.
When I asked the question about, you know, her, and I actually had a direct thought in mind when I asked her about that. So did you read about John Kapoor, who's the billionaire owner of Insys? One of the big pharma companies.
No.
That was in March convicted.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he was one of the guys. Was a conviction of opioid bribery.
Oh, he was the first one that was actually convicted.
Yeah,
I remember
in March.
Reading that on CNN. Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna lie, and you know, back of my head, I kind of, you know, a little clap, and just like,
I was happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, finally some justice. Some. Right.
We hear about all these drugs that are helpful that are non-addictive, but the problem is they fall by the wayside because these big pharma companies, Insys, whatever, mm-hmm. John Kapoor and his company, they come out with these ultra-addictive opioids, mm-hmm. and they get all the media.
It's
they get
so
the, all the
sick.
Attention.
Like, it really is sick.
I hope that guy never sees light of day.
Oh, yeah.
And there went the sponsors.
But no, seriously, when you think about the power and influence these companies and these people have over
everything.
Everything. Yeah. It's sick,
they have
man.
A lot
it,
of
it's
power.
Scary. Yeah.
A lot of power. Yeah. And so they've done a lot of research too on, you know, just mindfulness practices, like and learning how to meditate and how that can help ease pain.
I was so embarrassed about meditation. I went to my therapist
and being mindful is one of the biggest things as far as mental health and weight loss.
Yes.
Just being mindful.
She made me do it with her in the room, so that was really uncomfortable the first time. But then I tried it by myself later, mm-hmm. and I really enjoyed it.
Isn't it fun?
And I was like, this is super, super helpful.
Yes.
And I like to listen to ocean sounds. That's like my favorite thing.
There you go.
So you have no idea how many times a week I Mel, go to your happy place. Just leave me alone.
That's right.
And
then
my earphones in, I'll even fall asleep with it on sometimes. If I know that my mind is not going to stop running that night, I will put my earphones in and put that on.
I don't even know where this episode went. We probably should have cut it off like
just keep going.
20 minutes ago.
Who cares?
It's good stuff, though. We're talking about mindfulness.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
But here's the deal.
Which
Who's going to make
with
money?
Addiction?
Nobody's going to make money off of mindfulness.
Right.
Right.
So
it's not in
it?
A pill. No. Right. So why teach people? And doctors, right, who are really overworked and they have like 15 minutes with each patient, mm-hmm. they don't have time to teach their patients mindfulness.
Right.
Right.
True.
Who's going to pay for that time?
My doctor's over 60 and thinking about retirement at this point. You know, But I respect my doctor because he has never been one to push any drug on anyone.
That's awesome. Good for him.
And I'm, you know, for the longest time, I fought my kids being on ADHD medication.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sean hated it.
It drove me nuts. And, you know, and he went through every step with me. He's like, well, let's do this. Figure it out. Let's mm-hmm. do this. Let's figure it out. I'm not going to prescribe it until I know 100% that is the only choice we have.
Right.
And in the end, for the two of them, it was.
Yeah.
It worked.
Mm-hmm.
But it took years of going through steps to get to that point.
Sure.
Which is what they should be doing. Following a process before medicating, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Depending on the situation. I mean, if you have a surgery, you might definitely need a pain medicine.
Right.
No, I went through.
Maybe not in all cases, but.
Well, he did actually prescribe it for me. I went through a kidney stone, and he came and visited me in the hospital, and he's like, here, I'm going to give you 10 Oxycontin. And I looked at him, and I was like, I'm not going to say his name, but very good doctor. I love him to death. Kevin knows him. And I'll say his first name. I was like, Billy. I'm like, hey, Billy. I was like, it's not happening. I was like, I'm not even going to take him home. And he's like, you sure? It's going to be real painful the next couple of days. So I'm like, I'm good.
You'll be all right.
And it was really painful the next couple of days. And by the end of it, I was probably thinking.
But did you die?
What is the matter with you?
Seriously, you control your wife, bro.
What movie is that from?
I have no idea.
You have to know.
It's
the
movie. Last time you're on this show, woman.
The Hangover, man. The little Chinese man.
Ken Jeong. He's actually Korean.
Oh, sorry. Mr. What is it? Chung Jug?
Ken Jeong.
Ken Jeong.
Jeong. Sorry. Oh, sorry, Mr. Jeong.
He's actually performing, I think.
In Dover Downs.
Yeah. Yeah. Dover Downs.
Maybe.
Yeah. I got you.
Oh, God bless us.
God bless us.
I don't even remember where the hell I was going with that.
About how the next few days were really painful.
Yeah, but I didn't take it. And I
but you didn't die.
But the whole reason I didn't bring it home was because of my family's history with addiction.
Right.
I'm not.
You have that vulnerability, probably, and so why mess with that? Yeah. Why risk it?
Although, I have told my wife that when I turn 60, for the record, in the last four generations, we have one male in our family who's made it to 60. One.
That's it.
Can we make this 61, by one. The way?
Terrifying.
That's a terrifying. Lot of intergenerational trauma.
Yeah.
It's terrifying. And, all right, so...
I would tell you...
Wait,
it's the least likely one to have made it there.
That's all right, hold on. Let's give a little... It's going to be a little dramatized, but this shit is real. Mm-hmm. The first male, he's just about to make it out of his 50s. He was rushed to the hospital on the eve of his 60th birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Rushed to the hospital. What happened? He was taken to the hospital.
COPD?
Yeah,
COPD.
Yeah, he had something wrong with his heart, so he had to be rushed by the hospital. And then something happened where he got...
Heart attack
he had to have...
Point.
Shut up, Mel.
Sorry.
He had to have a surgery.
No, but before he even made it into the hospital, he got hit and run over by a car.
I don't remember
You've
part.
You've got to be kidding me.
I'm not even fucking joking.
You can't make that shit up.
I swear to you, my mom
told me
shit.
It was all like in the 2 weeks leading
We're
up to his...
We're going to have to confirm this.
I
believe you... But we
Simmer
gotta
down.
Confirm.
Simmer down. Our listeners got too
our
many
listeners
voices.
Need facts. Real facts.
Shut up.
Did you we'll say confirm. Sex?
Yes. Facts. We'll facts. I have a list.
All right. We'll confirm this next episode, but my uncle, he was on his way to the hospital because of whatever the hell
day.
That one, and he was literally hit by a car the same night on the way to the hospital or when he got to the hospital or...
It was within the first, 2 weeks leading up to that experience. I mean, that's...
I'm pretty sure it was... I don't
he
know.
Had multiple health issues before
There was,
that.
Like, multiple things in the same night that was, like, just trying to stop him from getting to 60 years old.
The fact... The 2 weeks leading up to his 60th birthday were so full of trauma. Like, he had a surgery that went wrong, and he was, like, in intensive care.
He was hit by a car.
So
I know that
like
much.
So he's, like, from Final Destination.
Yeah, pretty much. They wanted
Every
him dead.
Every turn of his life. Is like
I called him on his birthday and I literally cheered. I was like,
where
thank
has
you.
This show gone? I feel like we are so gone. I gotta go pee. I'm just gonna go pee.
You're still talking about your family.
It makes it fun.
And for the record, he was an addict for much of his life.
See? And so, no, but I'm glad you said that. So there's the trauma, I think, that precedes addiction, but then there's also trauma from having an addiction. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
And then you gotta deal with both.
How many? So what? This is, I don't want to say what percentage you call it because that's really hard to say. But
sure.
Especially when you don't do math.
I don't. I don't do math.
How often do you see patients that were prior to whatever medical issue they had were not addicts but come out of that? And this feeds right into what I was just talking about. Insist the guy the Kapoor being arrested.
Right.
You know. How often do you see these guys come out of their medical issues as addicts?
Yeah, I've had a number actually that were fine until they had, you know, a sports injury in college and were prescribed OxyContin or had their wisdom teeth out, right? And were given 30 OxyContin, right? After having your wisdom teeth out.
Yeah.
Like, come on, people. But again, like the way the drug companies spun this.
30 for that.
Exactly.
Like,
so.
I had my surgery for my boobs, and I had 5.
Isn't that a divorceable offense?
What?
To have boobs removed after the fact?
Divorceable?
It shouldn't be.
I don't know. I'm not...
It's like a breach of contract.
I'm not a marriage expert. Like, I actually don't do couples therapy.
And the doctor wouldn't listen to me. I told him to put it in her ass, but...
I wouldn't have minded that because I really sit on my spine. It's painful.
You sit on your spine.
It's painful.
You need some extra cushion.
Exactly.
Guys, that sounds great. All you out there who don't know me, I love my wife to death. She really is the better half.
Thanks, hon. I'll take that since I got dogged earlier.
No. It's see, you missed it earlier.
I'm joking.
I don't know, Sean. I just met both of you today, and I got to say, I think I prefer Mel.
Yes!
I am not even upset by that. I prefer Mel.
That's awesome.
But I think most people prefer Sean usually.
Like, why?
I don't know.
Emily's fired. No.
You just messed up his winning streak.
Oh, man.
No. So, on the way down here to do this interview, we stopped at Wawa. Shout out Wawa to get some food. And I ran into, she had walked out already, and a guy had walked by that is from my normal neighborhood, from the hood that Kevin and I grew up in, Richardson Park.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, Nick. I was like, how you doing? We talked for a couple minutes. And, you know, and he had his little one with him. He had just had, his kid was like a year and a half old. And I was like, dude, I was like, you're my age and you're starting over. I was like, what does it matter with you? He's like, I have no idea. He's like, this is what I get. This is what I get for marrying a younger woman. And I was like, exactly. And he's like, and I told him, I was like, look, every time I walk into some place, my wife makes me look better. And not because, and people are like, wait, she looks make me look better. Is she ugly? What the hell? I'm like, no. Because the fact that she is that much better than I deserve, it raises my status.
No.
And you ask any of my friends, they were like, they ask me all the time, like, dude, how'd you get her? I'm like, I don't know. I just, you know, I got her really, really drunk and married her, and it's too late.
I think we've gotten way off topic.
You're
short
shooting darts. That's
let's go ahead and end the episode now.
No.
Give our thanks to Emily for
no, we're still talking.
Yeah, we're talking. We're bullshitting. Yeah. We're shooting the shit.
We have. Just keep going for a couple minutes. We're good. Leave me alone.
Kevin's like literally banging his head on the table.
Yes.
We can shoot the shit with Emily after we stop recording. I'm just saying.
All right. We'll keep going for about 15 minutes.
I think people find this entertaining. I mean, I know I listen to a shitload of podcasts. Because I got to drive to Wilmington twice a week.
Yeah.
And that's...
Boo-hoo.
That is hell.
I drive to King of Prussia.
Oh, yeah.
Allentown.
You're right.
Cape May.
You win.
Rockville.
Kevin, you win.
I drive to Wilmington every day.
I'm just saying. It sucks.
All right, so both of you win.
No, I'm just saying that's wrong. My job is in Wilmington.
What you're saying is you commiserate with me.
No. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Right? But no, I like listening to podcasts where people talk about this shit. It's entertaining.
And Kevin's here being a little girl, but
serious stuff.
Why am I being a fucking girl?
What's wrong with being a girl?
Nothing at all.
Right.
Good answer.
I married one.
Turd.
Kevin is one of us.
What?
Look, you're I'm one good. Of us, Kevin.
He's got really good hair, doesn't he?
He does have really good hair.
Yeah, if you guys saw this hair.
Apparently, I'm the odd man out. She likes Mel more than me. You're a little girl and you're fine, so I'm just going to quit.
No, it's okay. Sean, I got nothing but love for you.
Everybody's friends here.
We're all friends.
And
right.
She's listening enough. She knows we're not politically correct, so.
Yeah.
Ever.
I'm not.
Good.
I don't apologize.
Man, we are more alike than I thought.
We are not PC in this family.
That's good.
Whatsoever.
I was really nervous because I was like, you know, I say dumb stuff, Sean, and I'm just crazy stupid, and I was like,
you're not
and now
stupid.
We're gonna do this podcast. It's gonna be super serious because she's a counselor.
No, yeah, because we're so serious all the time.
No, but
she's like a counselor, so I thought it was gonna be like a super serious episode.
No,
she drives me nuts because she thinks that she goes.
I tell her
all the times. I tell times. Mm-hmm. I can't even speak.
Mm-hmm.
I tell her all of the time.
All of the time
that she is extremely intelligent. She just says dumb things.
Right.
All the time.
Yes, all the time.
All the time is right.
So just when I first met her, I drove a Buick Rendezvous.
Oh, I know exactly what
it's
those look
ugliest
like.
Car.
Yeah, ugly as hell.
No, it's not.
I definitely didn't go out with her car.
I'm like,
no.
Yeah. Thank you.
The res de vous.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brent.
And she's like, her brother is a mechanic and asked her, what does he drive? Obviously, because that matters to a mechanic.
It does.
And she's like, I don't know, a rendezvous? And he's like, rendezvous? I can't even say it now. And she's like, no, there was definitely a Z in there.
It was a silent Z.
And she's like, no, that's not how we pronounce it in America.
I said it in was America? French. It was French.
That's right. It is French. That's awesome. I have respect for that.
I think my whole thought process of getting to that makes a lot of sense. Res de vals.
If you never.
Are we still talking about addiction?
Yeah, we're bullshitting. No.
Do you have any more questions, Kevin?
No, I ran through all my questions.
Well, then why are you getting on top of our ass?
Because I'm wondering, we're sitting here talking about res de vus and bullshit.
And have you not
people
heard?
Find that entertaining.
And we're well over the hour mark, so are we?
We're almost we're in the 2 hours, so we're just finishing up.
So might as well
up.
Just go, keep going.
Let me tell you this. Do you want to know how much of my counseling sessions are bullshitting?
Yes.
How much?
Yes.
All right, please. Let me ask you this.
Well, actually,
can you bring some
hold
some
on.
Kind of relevancy into...
I am trying.
No, hold on.
I'm trying.
He's trying to cut us off. I told you, he cuts people off. That's what he does.
Shut up for a minute.
Uh-huh.
It's a relevant question to what she is talking about.
Okay.
My ex-wife
uh-huh.
had said previously, when we first sent our son to counseling,
right.
She's worried about the fact that the counselor is just going to hear exactly what he wants her to hear.
Right.
Not the whole truth. And she prefaced this by saying, because when I first went to counseling, that's all I did.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't... I molded my statements
mm-hmm.
so I got the reception that I wanted.
Exactly. And that's not therapy. Right? Right?
But
right?
So how do you make people be honest?
You do this.
You bullcrap with them.
Right? Right? Like... If I just sat there and said, oh, let's talk about your feelings, right?
I would have been scared if I ran away.
Right? That's creepy.
It is creepy.
That is creepy
it's
shit.
It's creepy. It's so, too friendly almost,
no,
too.
Right? And so I often, right? And I often tell people, like, the biggest thing that I had to learn, right, was that I use myself, right, as the biggest tool in my tool belt, right? Like, I have to show up in every
She's a
session.
Tool,
I am
saying.
A total tool. With a capital D. Right? But like if my clients don't know a little bit about me, right? They're not going to trust me. If they don't know that I have 3 kids and that sometimes I fight with my husband, right? And that, yes.
Because you're human.
I am a human fucking being.
Right?
And so are you.
So basically right? What you're saying is your kids are going to have trauma.
Yes. I have no doubt that they already have tons of trauma.
Actually, you got to get it across to these people. Hey, I have
how to
shit
relate.
Just like you.
I do. And I am not looking down on you. I'm not sitting up here on my high horse telling you how to fix yourself. Because you don't even need fixing.
That is huge.
I can't
You're going to get
you.
A waiting list from the show.
No, I don't keep. Your I don't keep a waiting list.
Well, that now they know that. But there would
no,
have
but
been.
Seriously, like... Obviously, she has clients coming in, like, they need to understand, I have my shit just like you have your shit.
Right.
Tell me your shit. Like, obviously, that's your profession, so you're there to provide them a service, but they need to feel a sense of security.
They do. They need to feel
need
like they're, like, I'm safe to attach to.
Exactly. Like, look, I'm not just a professional, like, I'm going to tell you what's right and wrong in this world, whatever. Just,
yeah, no.
There's
yeah,
it's a fine line. I feel like
it is because I also want them to feel like I'm strong enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want them to see that I am not perfect by
That's
any means,
one.
And I am a person just like you. But I also can hold, right? I have the strength to hold,
right.
Whatever you bring to me.
That's a right. big one.
I think the biggest issue is just getting that level of honesty.
Yes,
and not
feel like you need to impress me.
Yeah, just, no bullshit.
And that's
I'm probably one of the oddest patients because I totally just let it out.
No, we like those.
I was
like,
let me tell you what's, I was just like, let me tell you what's been going on and then what can we do to help.
That's awesome.
The situation. And honest to God, coming from the relationships I've had, that is exactly why I identified with her and married this woman.
Oh.
Because she is, as pain in the ass as she is brutally honest.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my biggest, honesty is one of my, I care more about honesty than anything else.
It's one of your core values.
I actually got my brutally honest self from my friend.
Honesty.
From my friend Kim.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kim.
I wasn't always
like and Kim, we'd love to have you on sometime.
Ooh.
We know.
Ooh. I know a thing or two about Kim.
It takes bravery.
Yeah, we don't want to hear about it.
It takes bravery and courage to be honest.
I think I sometimes shut down with him. Like when it's stuff that not relating to us and even stuff relating to us, I'll shut down sometimes. But it's I found it easier to talk to a stranger.
And a lot of people do.
I don't want that person to pick sides.
Sure.
I just need a different route of thinking for myself.
But that's the biggest issue with a lot of people who seek therapy is they, and it, again, what my ex was telling me about our son was that she wanted to go in and hear nothing but good things about herself. So she lied and manipulated the story so that the therapist would say, well, you're okay. This is
that helps nobody. Nothing.
It doesn't help.
And to her benefit, she has realized this and has accepted that. And
she's awesome.
Yeah.
See, bipolar. And I would also though.
Well, yes, definitely.
I would blame. I hate doing this because I feel like I'm throwing my kind under the bus, but I would also blame that therapist a little bit, right? For saying, okay, listen, you're coming here for a purpose. And I still haven't heard what's wrong.
Yeah.
So what the hell? Right. But, let's get honest.
Well, I mean, so if you want to talk about
how can you help people
if you're disagreeing with them?
And when they're just spitting lies. Bullshit.
Well, also, too, I'm paying them, so why would I not? I wouldn't be able to.
That is the A dumb. Number one. They're worried about that payment. That is the problem. I'm not saying you.
Oh, yeah. No, I get it.
Who? Mm-hmm.
But a lot of therapists, a lot of these therapists only care about the dollars that are coming in. A lot of them have been in this business way too long.
Yep. They're burned out.
Yeah.
They're burned out. They've heard so many stories, and they're like, you know what?
How do I get through this?
I'm getting $50 if she just talks. I don't care anymore.
It's true. A lot actually are like that.
Yeah.
I don't see this therapist anymore that I was originally going to. But for the most part, she listened, and then she would give me comments here and there, but then mostly she just gave me tools, which I needed.
Yes.
That might not work for all of her patients, but I just needed some
tools. That's what you needed.
Right.
I think that's what most people need is just coping skills.
Yep.
The ability to do this stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I also think there's some people that just need to blow off steam. Maybe they don't have good friends that they can just do that with, or you know what I mean?
Right. And so then we work on, maybe you should get some friends that are safe, right? So you don't need me so much.
Because there might be like people with social anxiety.
Yeah.
They're not going to be the ones that are going to go chat.
That's easier said than done, though.
Hey, what bartender. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just
getting good friends.
Getting friends,
Oh, well, but I.
But then we have to look at the patterns, right? Like what has attracted unhealthy people to you in the past?
Right.
I wonder, right? Or what is it about unhealthy people that is familiar to you, right? I mean, there's just so many different ways to go with all of that.
Right.
As a therapist, or I don't know what's the proper term.
Whatever. Call me whatever. Just call me...
Emily.
Hey, you.
Hey, you. Then I went to Pink Floyd.
So through this process, I mean... Many years of education, doing this professionally, have you developed a skill for identifying liars? For people who bring you these stories? And you're like,
I think the eyes, totally. The eyes say a lot.
I feel like I am kind of a human lie detector.
I believe it.
How does Scott feel about this?
He will tell you it's not fun living with a therapist. And my own kids have said to me so many times, like, ugh, why does my mom have to be a therapist?
They say it just like that?
Yeah, they do. And then I say, honey, I'm already saving. I'm already saving for your therapy fund. Just let me know when you're ready.
I work with eight other people.
Right. Although they aren't taking new clients, so you have to wait a while.
Neither am I, so you're not coming right. here.
Right. No, you never therapize your family.
Therapize. Hypnosis.
Therapize is a verb.
If I was a family member's therapist, I'd totally make everything work in my own favor.
But it's good that you're aware of that.
Yes. I'm sorry. Who wouldn't, though, a little bit?
Oh, I would.
If there's, like, fighting on the holidays, there's some way you could finagle how to not make that happen anymore.
Because it's uncomfortable.
Right.
What was the question, Sean?
Shut it down a long time
ago. What was the question?
I don't even remember at this point. I'm thinking about her family and holidays. All I'm thinking is, like, is there any way we can convert the Dallas Cowboys fans to Eagles fans? Like completely off topic.
I think when that happens, hell will freeze over.
Yeah. Thanksgiving got ruined. Oh.
On that, it was the best. Like, was
half
it two,
Dallas
3 years
fans,
ago?
Half Eagles.
Yes.
Wow.
And we were at.
That's serious.
We had Thanksgiving dinner at the house. So her cousin is a Dallas Cowboys fan, and his wife is an Eagles fan. I know. She doesn't quite get it.
I'm not as bad as that. Like, I'll root for Dallas when they're not playing the Eagles.
Shut your mouth. Can I hire a divorce attorney now?
I grew up with my family loving both, so I don't mind doing that because I'm not invested
as
much in football. I prefer
baseball.
Shut up.
Wow.
I love you.
I love you, but shut up.
He did.
So... We were at her cousin's house. He is a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Right. Again, I'm sorry.
His wife is a huge Eagles fan. She bought him. So when it came out that the Eagles were playing Dallas in Dallas on Thanksgiving, it's like 3 years ago.
Yep.
She bought him for his birthday in August a trip to Dallas to not be in the house.
To go to the stadium. That was his first time.
She's like, I'm shipping you out.
Yes. And it was the best because by like halftime we were up like 35-0. I don't even remember what the score was. It was I'm texting him. I was like, "How's that stadium?" Because you know we're whooping that ass right now.
Well, anyway, most of the family left after they ate, like immediately, because
right. you got to watch the game.
They're all talking smack on each other's
team. They were
Dallas
fans.
And
they had to leave. His own kids left the house.
So it ended up being me, my Aunt Linda,
me,
and
Lisa,
David, just. Well, and for the longest time in the dining room, it was just three of us just sitting there looking at the Black Friday ads, eating our dessert,
making your plans.
Right.
No.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry we got off topic. I hope everybody's enjoying our off-topicness.
I find it entertaining. But
well,
that's
I think
just
you
me.
Gave us a lot of good feedback, and people are learning about how counseling works, too, so maybe it'll make them more comfortable to go get help.
Yes, I love just kind of helping people with the whole mystery that surrounds the process. Like, I think a lot of people look at therapists like Oz, you know, like it's the man behind the curtain. And I'm like, we're just people.
Yeah,
you know?
But they, I don't
they're
think
not going to fix every problem.
Right.
But maybe they can help you wade through it.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we're with you on
there is a lot of mystery behind addiction, period. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
It's.
Yeah, especially if you haven't.
There is no black
it.
And white.
No,
like we said, there like what we have learned through from we started this podcast from now, there is no black and white.
No,
sobriety is different for everybody.
Amen.
Approved. Like it's improve day to day.
Man, it's crazy how different it is for everybody. Like how drastic the differences are. Some people think that you even, you know.
I think the level of addiction issues is just amazing to me day to day. Like, within our own
family.
And
you can't discount anybody's thoughts on this either because, oh,
we started this.
Weed, you know, that's a terrible thing. Okay, that's how you get by. That's how you're going to stay sober? Great.
Yep.
I support that. I appreciate because... Other people feel like they have to smoke weed. Like, all right, I need to smoke weed to stay off of opioids or heroin or whatever it is, but I'm just smoking weed. I'm, you know, this.
That's harm reduction.
it's it is so different, which is a form of sobriety.
And that's great.
You are working your way towards being a
harm reduction is great.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It is like if you so different for everybody.
I'm glad to hear a therapist say that.
No, if you want to go and join the circus and that's what's going to keep you sober, you have my blessing.
Circus, really?
Right? Like whatever it is. Whatever it is. If you want to be an acrobat,
it's okay.
I'm pretty sure she's the best therapist in the land.
In all the land.
I don't know about
that. In all the land.
In all the land. But no, harm reduction is a thing, right? I mean, that's part of motivational interviewing.
Yeah.
Is, all right, how can we reduce the amount of harm in your life?
Yeah.
How can we help you protect yourself? And even before we get to that point, too, how can we help you realize that you are worth protecting?
How often do you have to delve into them facing their issue? I mean, is that not...
Oh, that's every single case.
You know, it's terrible.
So I mean, if it's if it's mental abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, along, they have to face that before they move on.
Yeah,
you know, it's terrible. Let's say it's someone that really had like a great life, really never any troubles, and they're a very confident person in their self and self esteem and all that. And then for whatever reason, they use drugs, whether it was a peer pressure situation, and then it goes downhill real fast. And then at that point, they're beat down because maybe they've done bad stuff.
Right.
So now you help them, like, rebuild themselves?
Yeah. So shame is a huge piece of any addiction. Mm-hmm. Right? So I think of, and one of the things I work with every client on is, what is the difference between guilt and shame? Right? So we've got to look at, all right, guilt can be a self-righting thing, right? Where you're like, oh, shit, I messed up.
Yeah.
Right? How can I do better next time? Right? That's a good
fine
thing.
Line between
guilt and shame.
Oh, there is.
Sounds like.
And but some shame, people don't know the difference.
They don't.
That's the problem.
No, they don't.
That's why I'm listening.
Because shame is not just, oh, I fucked up. Shame is, oh, I am a terrible human being and I am beyond redemption. Right? So that is toxic and paralyzing. Right? So if you look at it that way. Now, you can also look at shame as being like...
Shame is seriously being walked down the damn streets, getting the bells rung out or saying, shame, shame.
Yes! No. On Game of Thrones! Right?
Is everybody ready for that episode tonight?
No. That's like literally the only scene I've ever watched from Game of Thrones.
What?
I know!
Oh!
And it's kind of fitting, though, that you saw that.
Well, here's, I can't watch it because I think it's just too much, like, it's too intense for me. Like, I can't watch intense
read the
stuff
books.
Like that. I'll read the books.
It's
I could
very
do that.
Intense, but there was at one point where I was thinking about not watching it anymore.
It's just too much.
It got literally mentally after, disturbing at one point.
Wait, right? After episode, so I'm not going to get into it, but. After episode 9, she was sick and home and watching. She binge-watched stuff like this is like leading up to season 4. She was binge-watching. She got to episode 9 of season 1.
Right.
I walked in the door as justice entered, and she goes, I will never watch this shit again.
I was sobbing.
As she was pressing start on episode 10.
See? It gets you hooked.
Yeah, it was. But it was a hard scene.
It's
but there
lot.
Was like this really horrible scene way down the road after that.
Right.
And I said, and he's like, I'm going to admit I got choked up there. And then. I'm sidetracked at the end.
Kevin's really good at keeping us on task.
Yeah, we're not so good.
It doesn't work.
But anyway, there was like this other horrible episode and seasons down the road. Almost the whole show is horribleness. But
but I still watch it.
Right.
I love it.
But there's extra horribleness. So Sean was like, I'm not going to lie, I got choked up on that one. I was like, really? After all the other crap you've seen on this show? I was like, I've numbed myself to this show. I am not feeling anything. My feelings are gone.
That's what people do. Right? That's what people do. And if you can't do that on your own, right, you're going to find a way. You're going to find a way to do it because uncomfortable feelings are not tolerable.
Yeah.
To most humans.
I love how Emily's reeling it back in.
She reeled it back in.
See, to being relevant to our conversation and not just a Game of Thrones conversation.
Do you want to come on every week?
Sure.
Seriously, at this point.
I would love to. If it's at Kevin's house.
You're not driving up to Davis.
I mean, I love Philly, but it's a long drive.
It's a long drive, even with me living in Newark.
It's not close enough to Philly.
You're right. It's not even really Philly. It's Malvern.
Malvern, exactly. Malvern.
Fuck it. The production is staying here.
David, you're coming down here.
Sorry, David.
You're SOL, man.
We have our intern professional.
That's right.
That will always be on our
show. Wait, how is that
impossible? Intern
professional? That was kind of a, what is it, oxymoron?
I'm an intern because I don't get paid.
Yeah, exactly. It makes volunteer. Sense.
That makes us all interns.
And yeah, that's
none
okay.
None of us get paid.
It did make sense, though, because she's not getting paid, but she's our professional.
But I am a professional.
Exactly.
This is amazing.
All right, guys.
I thought about that before I said it.
Good job, Kevin.
Thank you.
Yeah, great hair.
Sorry. I think you're one of our favorite guests. Thank you.
Thanks.
Guys, I want to say thank you to Emily Evans.
Thanks for having
me. She is not accepting new patients. I apologize.
I'm not accepting new patients.
But if you keep trying, maybe in the near future.
If you're a pain in the ass, then maybe I'll take you.
It's basically if you're Mel.
I'm in, yes! Just kidding.
All right, guys. Talk to you guys soon. I appreciate you listening. Have a good week.
Thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Emily.